You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Alex Berg, will we ever get away from the drama around Bitcoin? Can we accept success? I guess that's the big question.
It will come to bite us in the ass every cycle, it looks like. Yeah. But I think the drama we're seeing right now is... I very, very much liked David Bailey's tweet just yesterday, I believe, which was like... Bitcoiners, your favorite band has gone mainstream. You need to start coping with it because this is the way things are going to be going forward. And I think it puts a lot of people into kind of like this very uncomfortable situation with regards to their identity and the fact that they've branded themselves as Bitcoiners and considered themselves part of this sort of posse of renegades and outsiders and the fact that it is indeed going mainstream is sort of like is having them reconsider their role in all of this. And I think they're kind of like, seems that a lot of them are trying to clutch to relevance by grasping onto drama as a way to find any place where their voices can be heard, really, because you're not going to, I mean, going around promoting Bitcoin is not really something that the average Bitcoiner, or telling people to buy Bitcoin, is just like, well, you're just one of 1,000 people that everyone's heard say heard that. So it's like, you're not special anymore. And I think people are still longing for the times when they felt special being part of the Bitcoin community.
People warned people about this for many years. I remember vividly, like 2017 to 2021 era, everybody who's bullish on Bitcoin is like, it's going to get to a point where everybody has Bitcoin and the concept of quote unquote Bitcoin community or just a Bitcoiner generally is going to fall to the wayside because everybody's going to get Bitcoin. Everybody's going to, or many people are going to adopt it. It's going to go up in price and that's what you want.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening. I think you can already see it. Like the places where it's more so kind of like inner groups or just subcultures that are a little more relevant nowadays. If you look on socials and Twitter and whatnot, where you're going to have the ordinals people, you know, and then there's some more technically inclined people, just the sort of like just the general Bitcoin, let's pump our bags, and we have something unique to offer. And we, you know, we understand something that others don't. It's just not the case anymore. So if you're trying to stand out, you're going to have to bring a little more to the table than just preaching to the choir.
Yeah. Bitcoin's growing up, freaks. Get used to it. Don't cling. Drop your ego. It's funny. Everybody warned. Like, Bitcoin's bigger than
your ego at the door.
Yeah, it is fun to watch though. And that's what we were discussing right before we hit record. I saw you tweeting this morning. A lot of worry in the broader Bitcoin community about, or not in the broader Bitcoin community, some members, and I'm funny, I'm saying the Bitcoin community, some Bitcoiners are worried that if the United States comes out and explicitly states that they want to acquire strategic Bitcoin reserve, that that could prevent the protocol from upgrading the way in which many would believe is advantageous in the future. I think you were making some good points that this doesn't make much sense. The government is just another user in the network.
Well, I mean, it's like when you ask people to actually break, it's easy to make sort of like those overarching statements. So like paint this like very broad statement, or, you know, it's going to ossify Bitcoin. But when you ask people to kind of like lay down the actual process of like what would happen, you find a lot less answers than people that are willing to make noise about it. Because realistically, I mean, you know, there are some cases to be made about changes to Bitcoin that would maybe improve privacy. I don't think there's ever going to be consideration for something that, you know, necessarily improve privacy at the protocol level in a way that, you know, Zcash has or something like that. I don't think that most, I personally wouldn't support something where, you know, every transaction would be shielded in a way that Zcash is. So I think you'll never really find consensus, even if you ignore the presence of a U.S. government there. So what else are we looking at? Well, we're looking at improving the security of Bitcoin, improving the scalability of Bitcoin here. And I think if an idea comes around, you know, if we somehow find a silver bullet to Bitcoin's scalability or something that significantly improve the security for users, for self. And that's the other concept, right? Is this idea that the powers that be will not allow for the improvement, for example, of self-custody technology. And I think the issue here is just really that this it's really just a US-centric point of view where they ignore that Bitcoin is on a global stage. There is this perception almost, there's been kind of this perception almost that only institutions have large sums of money. And only, you know, the idea that, you know, in the scaling conversation that Bitcoin will become too expensive and therefore will be captured by governments and banks. It still ignores the fact that largely wealth creation and you know, it happens. I mean, we're talking about individuals that have large amounts of wealth. The capitalists in the world remain corporations and individuals. And I think in the prospect of allowing them to secure, especially in different places in the world where perhaps the rule of law is not as strong as it is in the US, they'll certainly look towards solutions that'll improve the ability for them to remain sovereign and preserve access to their capital. And so if there is a silver bullet, and I don't think there'll be a silver bullet, but let's pretend for a second that there is, and everyone in the industry seems to agree that it's a good idea, and there's some sort of rough consensus around this, I find the notion that the US government would somehow, you know, some people have made the argument that they would just threaten to sell their Bitcoins, which seems like a very weak hand. It appears to me to be a very weak hand to play in the context where, you know, we're talking about like post strategic Bitcoin reserve, right? So the government has already openly admitted that there's some sort of value to Bitcoin and proclaimed on the world stage that they're going to accumulate Bitcoins, which, I mean, it seems inevitable. And apparently, I mean, the rumor seems to be that it is already the case that other nations are perhaps even ahead of the game. And so the notion that the US would threaten a soft fork by saying, well, if you guys do that, we're just going to sell, we're just going to dump our bags, seems like a very weak hand to play, because anyone else that is a competitor to the US or any other large entity is going to be, I think, very willing to come and sort of like pick up this glut in supply that just showed up on the market, especially if it comes at a discount, and therefore kind of like weakening the, you know, financial, I think, position of, you know, you could see a Chinese government or Russia or anyone else that has access to the capital to scoop up those Bitcoin to really jump in that opportunity. And so what else could they do? I think the argument comes from the fact that, okay, well, they might like muddy the water in terms of like actually trying to reach a rough consensus. But I think there's only so much you can do there depending on like what proposal you're talking about. So it seems a little short-sighted to me. But then again, then again, I think, you know, the runway for... It seems certainly that the scale of Bitcoin, I think it's not so much a matter of who is adopting Bitcoin, whether or not it's the U.S. government. I think it's simply the scale of coordination required for Bitcoin at this stage is making it so that, yes, even if you have a very solid proposal and something that seems, you know, simple, take a CTV or something like that, it's becoming very hard to just coordinate all of these stakeholders and making it so that everyone agrees on the way forward there. And so I think it'll require, and we can get into that, but you know, I think it'll require something that is a little more compelling than what's been put on the table at the moment. I was actually listening to an excerpt of a Bitcoin OpTech, I don't know if it's a podcast or just a space that they recorded just this week or something like that, where they commented on the you know, the chart that's been going around where developers are basically practically voting or just giving their opinion and rationale on prospective opcode. And there were a couple of comments made by Gloria and... Who's the other guy? Another core developer who, just forgetting the name right now, a chain code. Anyways, I think the gist of what they were saying is that, well, you know, I think people have an idea of what they want to use those opcodes for. You know, everyone is propping up Covenant as a potential solution to a sort of like future scaling improvements to Bitcoin. But there hasn't really been a very compelling story about how exactly this is going to be executed. And I think the counter argument to that is, well, we just, you know, well, the classic counter argument to that is just, we just want those primitives because we think that, you know, we should have those primitives available in Bitcoin. Therefore, we'll find out along the way how exactly we're going to be using it. They're just kind of like adding one tool, a couple of tools to our toolbox. But while, I mean, I empathize with this argument, but I think if you're trying to rally an entire ecosystem and an entire industry, you kind of like have to add a little bit more meat to the storytelling that you're doing here. And I think this is why, you know, like, you know, OpCat and what the Wizards are doing, they've had some success there because they were able to kind of like create a narrative around it, create a story around what they were trying to do. And I don't think that this has been really the case for a lot of the proposals. I used to be, you know, I'm still supportive of something like CTV, for example, but revisiting some of the quote unquote use cases that have been promoted throughout the years around CTV, I'm increasingly of the opinion that they're just not very compelling. I think, you know, another core developer, Antoine, was commenting on this. I think at this point, like, the most compelling use case for CTV is actually improving Arc. And some of the other stuff around, you know, Lightning and non-interactive channel, it used to sound to me like a brilliant idea, but talking to people that are, you know, you're looking at Lightning a little more, talking to people that are actually running Lightning infrastructure, you know, it has never been something that, you know, and they're the ones that are actually dealing with thousands of Lightning users and whatnot and providing services to them. There's a point where it's like, well, if that hasn't compelled them to kind of like champion this and be like, yeah, this is exactly what we need to bring our services and our applications to the next level. Well, you got to kind of like ask yourself, okay, well, it seems like a direction that we want to take, you know, it seems like something like CTV and Covenant is the direction that is going to improve things. But, you know, I think the other side of the argument is kind of like a more like a Rusty Russell thing where it's like, okay, if we're trying to do those things where we want to really be able to leverage Bitcoin script to make it flexible and powerful enough to achieve all that we think will be necessary in the future to build more self-sovereign use cases and applications and services, let's go about it the right way and do a comprehensive review of like what we'll need. And, you know, obviously that's going to take more time. So some people are a little more eager to do something now. So those are kind of like the two, the different sort of like factions, I guess, in this conversation.
This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial. Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines the tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC. I was telling you, I had a conversation with John Carvalho about some of this stuff yesterday. And I think for me personally, I'm more of the let's just wait and see. We got Taproot in, and so for anybody who's like new to Bitcoin listening to this, we're talking about like upgrading Bitcoin, and there are many ideas around how we can better scale and add better security assurances to the protocol. But we've done some soft forks in the last 7 years, SegWit and then Taproot. And I think for me personally, as somebody who on this podcast and Rabbit Hole Recap was championing Taproot after it got merged into the protocol and started to get adopted, you saw things that I did not foresee, was not even aware of happening on the network, like ordinals and inscriptions, which I'm okay with. But I think the emergence of that caused me to pause in terms of championing any future software, because like Bitcoin is arguably the most important distributed software protocol on the planet at the moment. And I do not feel comfortable pushing for things that I don't understand the full ramifications of, and have really over the last couple of years come to the conclusion that we should just try to do as much as we can with the tools at our fingertips right now that already exist in the protocol and see how far we can take that. And then if we hit limitations and you find compelling use cases that a new soft fork would enable, and it's very clear what that soft fork would enable in terms of everything it can do and the edge cases that it would enable, then yeah, we can have that discussion. But until then, I think we push the limits on how we scale this in layers. And that's part of the reason why I brought you on and why I'm excited about ARC, because I think ARC's an incredible example of something that only 2 years ago wasn't even a part of the mind space within Bitcoin. And rather quickly, the idea was brought to market. Now you've got two implementations of ARC trying to prove that it can add to what we're doing as it pertains to scaling Bitcoin and scaling payments. And there are these unknown unknowns that can arise with the protocol in its current state. I think we should just need to be patient, and I'm not too worried about, like you said, the government preventing soft forks in the future. Like, we should do the most with what we have.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not, I mean, I would say I'm not one of the person that's overly worried about like potentially what could happen, what negative impact the soft fork would have. I think most of the upcodes that are being proposed are rather harmless. I would even, you know, I've been on the record for saying that like the whole conversation about MEV is kind of, it honestly not not in, at least in Bitcoiner circle, not very impressive. I think it's just Bitcoiners really just haven't really caught up with the state of, I don't want to say state of the art because it's a weird thing to say, but you know, this is why I think I've been fortunate to kind of like follow Ethereum and all of this, and I think I've managed to get a bit of an edge in terms of understanding those issues. So anyways, all that to say is like I'm not really overly worried. I don't think that anything, I'd be fine with having Opcat on the network. For me, it's more so about just the fact that, you know, we're seeing it right now that coordinating a soft fork is a grueling thing. And I don't think I really don't buy this notion that this is, it's kind of like a muscle that we can work, right? And that if we get good at like, you know, doing those soft forks, then we'll just be able to have them more regularly. I totally don't buy that. I think it's very, very unlikely. And so I, for me, it's like, well, if we're going to go through that grueling, like consensus building exercise, let's just make sure that we get the most bang for our buck, right? So yeah, it's using patience. And it's very clear that the covenant conversation to me hasn't even really matured yet. You know, every other month we're seeing sort of like new twists and turns. There's kind of like an accumulated knowledge of people that are, there's certainly been, you know, in terms of mindshare, a massive uptake in terms of comprehension of what covenants even are and what they can bring to the table. But it still feels like even in technical circles, like we haven't really brought everyone up to speed. And so it feels to me like unwarranted to start making decisions about this at the moment. But anyways, you know, I agree. Like, I think, you know, with regards to ARC, it's unfortunate because a lot of the people that are having those conversations, it seems to me, have just simply not taken the time to properly understand what's on the table here in terms of the ARC protocol. I think one of the reasons why that is so is that there's a bit of a baggage with the way that the protocol was originally communicated. You know, it was originally pitched as this thing that would need covenants. And so I think that led to a lot of people kind of like filing that in some place in their cabinet and be like, you know, I'll just ignore this. I'll revisit whenever we get covenant really right now, because it seems like it's just not possible until then. And I mean, the progress over the understanding of what exactly ARC is, and the challenge in communicating exactly what ARC is, because it's such a novel concept, certainly it hasn't contributed to the fact, well, it's been kind of like a grind to get people to really wrap their head around it, even very technical people. You know, I've met this year at conferences, or at least ever since I've joined the ARC Labs team, I've met countless very, very competent Bitcoin developers who thought they understood how ARC works, and they just did not. And it's not because, you know, obviously they're just wicked smart people, far more intelligent than I am. But I mean, I think just the you know, the documentation has been sparse. We're ourselves trying to put together better documentation. The approach of, you know, shared UTXO, the notion of shared UTXO, it was originally pitched as, I think led to a bit of confusion. So we got a lot of work to do. But yeah, I'm usually bullish on the prospect of ARC sort of massively contributing to the near term and long term scaling capabilities of Bitcoin, even without Covenant. And Covenant would help ARC to scale. And when I'm talking about scaling, I mean, okay, well, if we get to a point where we have like hundreds and thousands of users of ARC, then yeah, it'll make things a little easier in terms of protocol, so like overhead and how perhaps improvement to the UX, but those are not things that we need right now to be able to ship the protocol and put it in production.
This RIP was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC. $40 off. This RIP was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff. We hung out in Riga at the Baltic Honey Badger earlier this year, and I got excited with how excited you are by ARC and the potential that it provides the network. And you're somebody I've been following on Twitter for probably almost 10 years now at this point. I've always respected your views on Bitcoin, and to see you this excited about this project piqued my interest. And to be honest, I think this is the first episode we've done a deep dive on ARC, and until you explained it to me, I did the first transactions on the second ARC protocol, the ARC. Mm-hmm. It's confusing because it's called second, but second, the company building their ARC implementation. And that was pretty mind blowing. It just worked, and it was really cool to see. We were able to do in round payments, move Bitcoin from on chain into the ARC, from the ARC back on chain. And it worked, and it was somewhat magical. But for the benefit of the listeners who may be curious what ARC is, and building off what you just described is the fact that many people are confused about what ARC is, even highly intelligent core developers and developers in the space. Why don't we take this opportunity to reset the stage and give an ARC 101 high level explanation from your perspective.
Let's try that. I mean, you know, I will say ever since I saw you in Riga, my own understanding, and I think our common understanding of the protocol internally has evolved at a very fast pace. And so we've been kind of like struggling even ourselves internally, and how do we talk about those things? But I think fundamentally what we've landed on is that just ARC is simply a sort of like transaction batching technology. What it allows you to do is that, you know, think of batching in a way that exchanges do transaction batching when their withdrawals from exchanges on chain. Right, they'll just get a bunch of withdrawal requests, and instead of doing a single one-for-one transaction for every user, they'll create a transaction where they distribute to their users a bunch of different outputs going to different addresses in a single Bitcoin transaction. So that's a form of batching. What we do with ARC, though, is that rather than kind of unfolding all of those outputs, all of those transactions going to individual users on chain into different outputs, we batch them into a single output. And so we have a one input, one output transaction But within that single output, you have what we call those virtual UTXOs that are going to their individual owners and are just as legitimate as a Bitcoin on-chain UTXO. So you can think of it as, well, rather than putting transactions into block in the way that Bitcoin does, Arc is almost kind of like a, it's almost kind of like a UTXO chain where we have those on-chain outputs and we nest a bunch of transactions into it. And then you use, and then from that point on, it's a client server relationship, right? You have this relationship with an Arc server. This Arc server allows you to batch your Bitcoin operation into those outputs that it creates. And you can use the server to make off-chain swaps, which are, again, amortized into those single outputs. So that can be used for payments, obviously. But we think payments are so like really the tip of the iceberg here. And, you know, a very easy example that we can use, which is our upcoming Arc node product, is something that allows you to basically rebalance your Lightning channels without having to do on-chain transactions every single time, right? So we can imagine having a bunch of Lightning operators. They join an Arc. They basically receive Arc virtual UTXOs. And whenever they need to rebalance their Lightning channel, get inbound liquidity, for example, for them to manage their operations, they will use a swap service. So we know we're working with Bolts. Bolts is one of the most popular, and honestly, one of the rising Bitcoin company in the space who have a killer product, have actually never taken VC money, and are just, and not that I have anything against VCs, but they've just been just like killing it, honestly. And so, you know, they've, and Bolts, I think one of the most popular product lately has been doing exactly this, this rebalancing of Lightning wallets, basically using Liquid, right? So how would that work is that you'd have Bitcoins on Liquid within the secured by the Bit, or, you know, by the Liquid Federation. And whenever you'd want to have inbound liquidity, you just basically do a swap. So you send Bolts some of your Liquid Bitcoin, and in exchange, they would provide you with liquidity on Lightning. And what happens there is that obviously you're skipping the Bitcoin on-chain transaction, which allows you to, so Liquid has very cheap transaction cost. Bolts, being a member of the Liquid Federation, is able to accept the risk of receiving Liquid Bitcoin. And that exchange, that swap of your Bitcoins against their Lightning liquidity, happens in an atomic way. So it's completely trustless. You don't have to trust Bolts again for anything. Either it works, it goes through, or it doesn't. And so we're doing the exact same thing, but with Arc. And so you can imagine just really sending, again, in the same way, having those virtual UTXOs, sending them to Bolts on Arc, swapping them to Bolts on Arc, and give them and for them to give you more liquidity on Lightning. So I think what happens there is that, well, you know, this is not a pure Bitcoin payment use case, right? What we're doing is we're bolstering the Lightning infrastructure and allowing Lightning operators to better manage the liquidity, and probably in the long run, I think is going to have a massive impact on the Lightning infrastructure, because, you know, we've seen it, you know, completely practically fail earlier this year when the fees on Bitcoin were extremely high, and, you know, the cost of purchasing inbound liquidity was just, it was unsustainable. And a lot of the infrastructure right now on Lightning was built around the fact that, well, you can rebalance your channel cheaply splice in and out on chain. But, you know, we know that this is not going to be the case in the future. So this is a use case that we think is going to be one of the killer use case probably of Arc. And we think that this whole sort of like paradigm of being able to swap off-chain and basically batch all of those swaps into single Bitcoin outputs on-chain is going to have consequence for every sort of layer that comes around that is not Lightning, that is a sidechain perhaps, or if some of those BitVM rollups pan out. Regardless of what comes out in the future that sticks and that gains market traction, the main way for people to access those different services and those different applications will be through swaps. There, you know, BitVM, for example, has been, you know, I think a lot of the BitVM builders have been very explicit in saying that the actual BitVM bridge will not be something that's sort of accessible and approachable for the average retail user. They expect large sort of like market maker and liquidity provider to go through that bridge, but the average user to kind of like move in and out of, for example, a roll up that might be built on top of that bridge, to move in and up in and out of that that roll up using swaps. And the prospect of using swaps, I mean, it's a good idea, but again, if you're going to be moving out of a roll-up onto Bitcoin by doing a swap, that involves a Bitcoin transaction. And so that's going to be prohibitive. So you might end up in a situation where people are, you know, my concern and the reason why I'm so optimistic about this use case is that up until now, we didn't have a good solution for people to, you know, move out of Lightning or move out of Liquid without having to incur the on-chain cost of Bitcoin. And that would have resulted in scenarios, if we project ourselves in the future, where people have access to those scaling solution, but, you know, the moment that they use one, they peg their Bitcoin into one, they're kind of like almost like locked in. Because, well, if they cannot afford the swap out, if they cannot afford to, you know, get out or close the channel or whatever, well, they're kind of like perpetually locked in. And so you create those silos and you start fragmenting the liquidity. You start fragmenting the network effect of Bitcoin. And so the way that I'm looking at this now, the vision that I have is that Arc becomes sort of like a buffer layer in between the main chain and every other application, services, sidechain layers, whatever you want to call it, that people are going to be using. Arc is this way for, remember how people used to say that, well, you know, your Bitcoins in the Lightning channel are not really locked into the channel. They're actually the most liquid or whatever. It's like that's actually true of Arc. It's like if you have coins that you're going to be deploying in some way, whether it is to use a payment service, a payment application, the payment layer, or to do some more advanced financial stuff, trading, whatever it may be, you know, unless your Bitcoin are going to cold storage because you're not going to touch on you're not going to touch them for a year, 2 years, or a decade, then most likely you want to have your Bitcoins sitting into Arc outputs to have virtual UTXOs, because those virtual UTXOs are kind of like almost, they're just much more liquid. I've been calling it kind of like this unified liquidity layer that allows people to be able to tap into all of the cool infrastructure that people will be building on top of Bitcoin. You know, that financial system that we're trying to build on top of Bitcoin, whether it's DLC based, again, whether it's more trust based, even if it's sidechains, multi-signatures, schemes, and whatever, you need a way for users to jump in and out of those services if they want to and not be locked in. And I think Arc is the perfect tool for us to be able to do that. And so, you know, I'm trying to avoid bringing in all of the technical details and then the technical nitty-gritty of like how exactly like ARK works and like what is an ARK around. And because I think people, this is where people start getting very confused about they start thinking of it as kind of like this monolithic construct where every ARK is going to operate in the same way. You know, ARK is not it's not something like Lightning where there's a spec that every implementation needs to follow. You know, you've been talking about Second, and it's very likely that the ARK servers, the ARK implementation that Second builds is going to be different. It is different than the one that we're working on in terms of different parameters and all of that stuff, in terms of the use cases that it targets. And that's the cool thing about it, because it creates this very versatile, you know, it's just this client server relationship, and then the server has different features that it can implement that are going to be best suited for different use cases. And the beauty of that obviously is that, well, I mean, if it needs to be stressed out, ARK virtual UTXOs are unilaterally controlled by the users in the same way that a Lightning, you know, your money in Lightning is controlled solely by yourself. You can always withdraw your ARK virtual UTXO unilaterally on chain if the server, for whatever reason, goes away. And so you preserved most of the, you know, security properties of Bitcoin, but you make your assets, you make your capital a lot more almost fungible and sort of like deployable. And I think, you know, one of the thing that we hope to achieve really is to contribute to moving Bitcoin towards an asset that is not solely, you know, this store of value. And I respect the store of value use case, and I think it'll remain the prevalent use case for Bitcoin for a number of years. But I do see an opportunity now with ARK to create things like Bitcoin native capital markets, where we're going to have tools to be able to build the type of stuff that perhaps people have looked you know, at other chains that might have been able to implement, you know, sort of like more permissionless, without it necessarily being completely decentralized or completely trustless, more permissionless applications that, you know, will compete on the market. They might require trust in, you know, a threshold of different validators, and that might be fine. I'm increasingly of the opinion that this is perfectly fine. This is actually what the market is demanding. I think one of the, it's becoming very risky for, I think teams that are trying to pigeonhole themselves into building perfectly trustless protocols. I mean, those are very unlikely to pan out in the first place. And, you know, when you look at the state of the market, what people are doing outside of, you know, holding Bitcoin and preserving it as a store of value, there are a lot of use cases where people are fine making trust trade-offs. And I think that that's okay. So, you know, going a bit of a tangent here, obviously, we're quite far apart from the actual explainer of ARK, but this is kind of like my vision. If you have specific questions, I'm kind of like happy to answer them. But again, I think it's important for people to understand what the protocol can achieve and the details of how exactly it works. I think once people are really interested in this idea that we can now batch Bitcoin transaction in a way that's much more efficient than it ever has been possible, and we can do that today without any soft fork, I think when you hook people with that kind of story, then they'll be able to figure out for themselves down the line. And I'm happy to help anyone that's willing to kind of like get into the details about how all of this stuff works. But you know, I think this has been kind of like a more successful full way for me to hook people into ARK than just giving a complete breakdown of the technicals, because Yeah, it can get a little overwhelming unless you're kind of like very deep in the weeds of Bitcoin technical stuff.
Yeah, and I think to try to succinctly reiterate what you just said, it's just like you view Arc as this buffer layer that is many to one, or excuse me, one to many to all the other protocols being built on top of Bitcoin. And because of the way that the virtual UTXOs work and the VTXO batching works, like that batching is dynamic and where it can be somewhat stationary, and you can switch VTXOs in and out before ever needing to make an on-chain transaction. So you have this sort of dynamic ability to switch VTXOs in and out between Arc and different protocols. Well, the VTXOs won't go to the different protocols, but they'll change balances commensurate between the protocols without having to make an on-chain transaction. So it's similar to Lightning in the sense that you lock UTXOs up and you can move sats around, but it makes everything more dynamic and helps glue everything else that's being created on top of Bitcoin together.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Lightning is it's just a way for people to it's just a way for us to coordinate on-chain activity between Bitcoin users. And you know, you look at the very first sort of like implementation almost of a system like that, and not that this is very much what we're building. I think, you know, it had a different purpose, but CoinJoin is you know, naturally a way for people to coordinate over their on-chain activity using a server, right? And that CoinJoin is designed to improve privacy. Arc is a way for Bitcoin users to coordinate over their on-chain activity using a server to improve scalability. Because we're just, you know, we're batching all of our transaction by putting them into an output. And then, you know, that output, well, what is this output? Okay. Well, it's a taproot tree. And in that taproot tree, well, you have what is effectively a covenant, right? What is a covenant? A covenant is a way to specify how Bitcoins within a Bitcoin output is going to be able to be spent. And so you can say, you can put 10 Bitcoin into a Bitcoin output and say, well, one Bitcoin is going to go to Marty, one to Alex, and one to Alice, and one to Bob, right? This is what a covenant is. You can say like the only way that you can spend those coin is by having those coin go to these people. And so this is a way for us to be able to batch those transactions, right? Because instead of having the full outputs, as I was saying earlier, when Coinbase makes that batch withdrawal, they put the full outputs on chain and say, okay, at the coin one to Marty, one output to Marty, one output to Alex. Well, this is very inefficient. How about we just put them into a single output, and the distribution, we have it nested by having this covenant within the spending condition of this certain output, right? Instead of having the outputs on chain, what we do is we restrict the way that a single output can be spent, and then it goes to individual people. So this is really like how it works fundamentally. And yes, this can obviously, you know, the first use case was for payments. We've done a lot of work on proof of concept around payments with Arc and what this might look like, and what the user experience might be like, because we want to be sure that Arc does not suffer the same fate that Lightning did, in the sense that, you know, the original picture on Lightning was, well, you know, we've solved retail payment, we have this perfect system, it's going to be amazing, it's going to be fast, cheap, and no pain. You know, we know now that it's not exactly the case. We know that there's a lot of challenges in terms of suiting Lightning to consumer mobile wallets. And so we want to make sure that we don't pigeonhole Arc in, and make sure that the pitch around Arc in terms of payment is not exaggerated, in the sense that there are UX challenges also to being able to achieve great payment UX with Arc. You know, you did a couple of you know, transactions yourself, some attempts, as you said, with the second team. And, you know, for transaction to be fast, you need some trust trade-offs, right? It's kind of like this idea of the out-of-round transaction. The out-of-round transaction, until the recipient has fully settled the money that they received into a new virtual UTXOs that they unilaterally control, you know, there's some trust relationship here with the server. And so how do you deal with all of that stuff? How do you present, you know, we have an app that's called Arcade, where we've proof of concept the whole thing. And you realize that, well, I mean, it's going to be a challenge. I think that payments, because you're dealing with consumers, because you're dealing with mobile wallets, cell phones and whatnot, payments is probably the hardest, you know, use case to really nail in terms of like what Arc can do. We think it can be done, but it's going to require careful, really considerations and UX research, because, you know, we didn't even get into the fact that, well, those outputs, those virtual UTXOs, they expire at one point, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you present that to users? Obviously, you're not going to tell them, hey, your money is going to expire, you know, like better refresh it or whatever. So you got to create those. Yeah, I mean, you can kind of like have it done in the background and whatnot. But okay, if you have it done in the background, it needs to be done when the wallet is not sleeping or whatever. Or can it be done when the wallet's sleeping in the same way that, you know, Lightning is trying to do this offline receive, where, you know, there's some background process. So, you know, those are still question marks. And it's going to be interesting to find out how we can tackle those issues. But as far as we're concerned, you know, we think that in the meantime, there are things like this Lightning rebalancing use case where you're kind of routing around a lot of the issues because you're not dealing with cell phones, you're dealing with servers. Lightning node operators have servers that are online 24/7. So all of the interactivity requirements, it's not a big deal anymore, right? The rotation, the refreshing of the virtual UTXO, you know how, you know, the original pitch was, well, the virtual UTXO is going to last like 4 weeks a month, and then you need to rotate it. You need to send it to yourself, basically, right? So that you get a fresh virtual UTXO, and then you get into the liquidity implications of that and whatnot. If you're dealing with servers, you can have a virtual UTXO that expires in 24 hours. And a server at the 23rd hour is going to rotate it automatically, because the server is always online. You don't have to worry about the server going offline, and so you can solve a lot of the liquidity implications, right, by shortening the VTXO, the virtual UTXO lifetime. So that's what I mean when I say, like, you know, in terms of how Arc is an idea of how you can use basically servers and taproot trees and batching basically to be able to perform different operations. And everything else, every other parameter around the implementation is subject to what use case you're trying to nail. And, you know, one of the things that we've explored that I think a lot of people felt really, it had pretty big impact and good reception, is this idea of, okay, well, how about we revisit payment channels? I'm not talking about Lightning channels. I'm talking about strictly unidirectional payment channels, right? And this is something that, you know, came about even before Lightning was a thing. This is something that kind of like even Satoshi himself had kind of like written as this not a spec, but he had some code on how you could execute those off-chain transactions between two parties by exchanging pre-signed, you know, transactions. And it was eventually implemented in Bitcoin J by Matt Corallo and Mike Earn, 2014 or something like that, I don't recall. And, you know, payment channel is very simple. You know, you don't have the routing, you don't have the liquidity issue of Lightning, because it's just like, I have a merchant, or I open a channel with you, Marky, and I say, I'm going to put like one Bitcoin into that channel, and it's only going one way. It's only going towards, in your direction. And so I'm just handing you assigned transaction of the updates of the channel. And then whenever, you know, we want to close it, you take whatever is the updated balance on your end, and we close the channel. And if I have some money left on my end, I get the money. And you know, those payment channels, they were never really considered, I think, because, well, they happened to come just before the whole conversation around Bitcoin scaling, block size war, where everything was precipitated into us having to find this solution. And you know, Lightning came about, and everyone was like, okay, we need to focus 100% on Lightning. And but they also from the fact that, well, you know, payment channels, they're not interconnected, you know, like Lightning channels are, right? So it's only one channel between me and Marty, one channel between me and Bitrefill, and so on and on, right? And so obviously, there's kind of like a, if you're having to open those channels on chain, there's a limit to how that scales, right? Because those are all on-chain transactions. But if you can open those channels within an arc, if you can open, because arc virtual UTXOs are just like on-chain UTXOs. So every script capability that is available with on-chain UTXO, you can do with virtual UTXOs. So what we demonstrated, what we did a proof of concept, is that you can actually open a unilateral channel with someone, a unidirectional payment channel with someone on Arc. And therefore, you start thinking about all of those use cases of Lightning where, you know, payments are only always going into one direction. This is a big problem for Lightning. This is something that, regardless of all of the improvements that we do to the protocol and all of the great research that is being done about improving liquidity flows and whatnot, I think if we insist on having those use cases where, you know, I open a channel with whatever, say like a service provider, and I'm just sending money one way and there's never money going back my way, well, what you end up creating is those liquidity hogs around the network, right? Those liquidity sinks. All of the liquidity is going one way, and then they have to rebalance however they see fit. A lot of that rebalancing happens, you know, off chain or whatever, and they're doing this circular stuff, but it never addresses really the problem that the underlying issue is that the flow of those Lightning channel, where Lightning should be bidirectional channel, right? It should be ideally, what's the ideal Lightning channel is one where I send you money, you send me money in a way that basically we don't have to rebalance. Like we have this like kind of business economic relationship where we're trading back and forth, and you know, we don't have, because every time that you're hitting the chain, every time that you're doing those rebalancing operation, you're creating a cost, and that cost has an impact on the entire Lightning network. So if we're insisting on using Lightning for all of these unidirectional use cases and creating those liquidity sinks and those entities that always have to rebalance one way or another, we're actually just increasing the cost of Lightning, really, because the rebalancing eventually has a direct impact on the cost of Lightning transactions. Right now, it's not so clear that, you know, this is Lightning. I think the economics of Lightning right now are kind of like a little muddy. I think there's a lot of things that are being subsidized. I think a lot of the Lightning infrastructure is kind of like being run as sort of like a loss leader by different businesses as a way to, you know, benefit their users. say like a river who has a brokerage service, they don't really care if they make money or if they lose a little bit of money running their Lightning infrastructure. At the end of the day, they're providing a service to their users that they believe is valuable, right? But you know, I think this is not sustainable at scale. So we need to find ways to optimize how we use those system and those scaling protocols. And so, you know, one of the things we've been thinking is what if you just have like a unidirectional channel going to someone like Bitrefill, right? I spend $100 at Bitrefill buying gift cards every month. I open a channel that lasts a month with Bitrefill on Arc. And whenever I need to buy gift cards, I just spend it directly. It's instant settlement, unlike regular Arc transactions, right? Regular ARC transactions are not instant settlement. Until you've rolled that into your own virtual UTXO, again, you have kind of like it's trust minimized, you could say, but you have this trust implication with the ARC server. And so if you're dealing with digital goods, instant settlement is important, right? If you're selling gift cards, you kind of like really want to have instant settlement, that confirmation. And so I could open channels, you know, and I don't have to have a Lightning wallet to do that. I don't have to have concern about, you know, liquidity and whatnot and liveness and all of those things. So, you know, again, this is just exploration. This is proof of concept. But we think that just generally speaking, the ability to do Bitcoin operations, Bitcoin transactions, Bitcoin swaps in a way that is much, much cheaper than on-chain, especially, you know, in a way it kind of like grows cheaper the more people are using it, right? Because you're amortizing the cost of these operations across the number of people that are basically participating in your batch output, right? So the more people in your batch output, the cheaper it becomes. So we think that this allows us to completely... It reopens the playbook of like, okay, well, what are the things that we dismissed before in terms of Bitcoin operation, Bitcoin's financial applications that we thought, well, it's going to be too expensive. We can't possibly do that on chain. Well, now we can do it relying on the same Bitcoin security, the same Bitcoin consensus security, but, you know, by sharing the cost with everyone that's kind of like in the same batches as us, right? DLCs, you know, a bunch of meta protocol stuff. You know, it's going to be interesting. We're going to continue to push. I think that are going to be very eye opening for people. And ultimately, again, it's just this ability, this excitement that I have to be able to build things that, yes, do not require permission or do not require having to fight it out on Twitter about which software we need to get because, you know, I cannot achieve what I'm trying to achieve without improvement to the Bitcoin protocol. Like, no, we can do it today. So that's extremely, extremely exciting. And we think that, yeah, next year is going to be a big one for ARC. And I think people are going to start rallying around it. And, you know, perhaps at least the last point for this is just like, ARC certainly benefits from covenants. So, and ARC is the one thing that people can focus on right now that is tangible, that can get to production. And if we make ARC successful and grow the adoption and attraction of ARC, it's then going to be a no-brainer to say, like, everyone's going to be like, oh, well, obviously ARC has product market fit and ARC can be vastly improved if we have covenants. So let's do covenants now. Now we have a solid case for covenant, a more compelling story for covenants.
And if I understand correctly, what would lead to like ARC, it's product market fit. It's helping people managing Lightning channels, do their channel balancing more seamlessly and less costly. You have these unilateral payment channels that materialize and people are using. It's saving them money. From what I understand, and I believe it's after a conversation with you, may have been somebody else, but if ARC gets product market fit and widespread adoption, there are scaling limitations within rounds, within a singular ARC service provider, correct?
I mean, there is a bit of an overhead in terms of the information that needs to be passed between ARC users and the server, right? When you're coordinating those batches, the server is going to say, okay, I'm creating a batch. Who wants to join this batch? And then a bunch of users are going to say, I want to register for this batch. I have a virtual UTXO.
Yeah, it's a bunch of signatures. It's a lot of data, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of data. And indeed, if you have something like Covenants, then you don't have to mind so much what else is... It's like, to put it shortly, it's just like there's a lot less data that you need to sign to be able. So the process is much more quicker. But honestly, this mostly helps things like consumer wallets. Because in terms of dealing with server, like servers are built for interactivity and you know, passing information quickly and reliably. So the bottleneck is not there. The bottleneck is really like, yes, when you want to involve consumer applications and consumer wallets and into your mobile phone, then Covenants are going to make a big difference to the user experience. There's a couple of other things, you know, maybe in terms of improving the liquidity requirements of ARC and whatnot, but it's not going to be a game changer for ARC to get Covenant. I've been kind of like almost making a point to kind of dissociate ARC from Covenants altogether, because ARC can be built today and Every use case that is pre-signed transaction in Bitcoin can be improved by Covenants. ARC is a pre-signed transaction protocol, so obviously it can be improved by Covenants. But it's not something that, you know, if we don't get Covenants ever, I think ARC is going to be still a foundational piece of the Bitcoin infrastructure. You know, maybe we'll need to find different ways to improve the user experience, and maybe it'll come through some trust minimization, some trust trade-offs. And it's not such a bad, it's not such a bad deal. You know, you look at what's Lightspark is doing with the state chain model, and this is effectively the trust model that ARC is with out of round transaction, right? You're trusting that the server is not going to double spend. The server and the sender of the transaction is not going to collaborate to double spend you. And, you know, in the context of using those servers that are service providers that are building a business around, you know, facilitating those batches of transaction and making money out of it, you know, it's kind of like,
it's not impossible. The likelihood of them colluding is very low.
Well, I mean, are they going to ruin, because all of this, you know, this collusion is provable. And so the moment that they try to double spend someone, and that's the thing, right? It's kind of like the risk model is isolated. It's not like a bridge where if the keys are compromised, everyone in the bridge gets rocked. You know, all of the funds get stolen. With ARC, it's kind of like isolated to a specific transaction. Where state chain is the same, you know, the risk is isolated to specific transactions. It's more targeted, right? And so the risk reward for a malicious actor is very diminished. And so the return on their ROI on trying to cheat with those kinds of protocol, you know, the incentives are very well aligned. And so I think for things like payments, you know, I think most people will have to settle on kind of like out of round style models, because like doing the full settlement is going to be hard to create great user experience around this. But that's fine, and that's completely fine. And you know, there are different ways to improve this. You can potentially involve other actors than the ARC servers, who could potentially, you know, be used as an escrow, maybe to co-sign even. It's a blank sheet in terms of like the design space. We're con- continuously exploring how this can be leveraged. And I think people will be I think some Bitcoiners are going to kind of scoff at the idea that, you know, some of the things that are going to be built on Arc are not perfectly trustless. But regardless, I think that people in the market that are demanding specific thing and are willing to make certain trade-offs are going to be very happy that, you know, we're creating this infrastructure that allows certain applications to be built that are much more Bitcoin native, do not require bridges, do not require, you know, getting stuck into this silo that fractures the network effect and all of that. So it's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah. And I think leaning into the channel management problem that exists on Lightning is a very smart idea. Because to me, that makes intuitive sense. It's a massive problem. Lightning usability over the years has gotten better, but you've talked to Lightning developers and channel liquidity is a pain in the ass for everybody. So if you can create a way to create interactivity with Arc to easily rebalance channels, you can imagine a scenario again, since Lightning nodes are online all the time and you've had that interactivity out of the box, you can just create APIs that automatically rebalance channels once they hit a certain threshold, and it just works. And that makes everything way better.
It's going to make the UX, the cost, we're not going to run into those, you know, we're not, and you're seeing it already, right? It's the same, you know, the Breeze's nodeless implementation, which leverages Liquid, right? It has created kind of like Lightning wallets that inherently have kind of like better user experience. You don't necessarily need to deal with all of like the channel management, and for the infrastructure, the service provider, the rebalancing is a lot cheaper and all of this. But obviously, it comes with the trust trade-offs of having to trust the Liquid Federation. And I think a lot of people at scale are not necessarily going to be necessarily willing to do that. And so Arc, it really becomes sort of like this perfect complement to Lightning. Because I think ultimately, for me, in the end, you're going to see wallets that are Arc-based, where you're going to be able to do Lightning payments, but in the same kind of like nodeless way, where what you're going to do, what, you know, the way I see it is you're just going to be swapping in and out of Lightning. You know, you want to pay someone, a merchant that accepts Lightning, you're going to have Arc VTXO, and you're just going to swap with Bolts, who's our infrastructure partner, right? And you don't have to have channels open. You're receiving a Lightning payment. It's going to go through Bolts. They're going to credit you in Arc VTXO. You're going to be in... Yeah.
I was going to say, is this similar to what we're seeing materialize with eCash Lightning connectivity, where you sort of have like a Lightning gateway between...
Exactly. It's the same. Exact same thing, but obviously without the trust trade-offs of eCash.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. You can see, and that's, and going back to what I said earlier, I think a lot of Bitcoiners, I think a lot fall prey to what you described earlier, is this existential moment of I'm not that important anymore. And then there's others who expect that Bitcoin needs to be all the things all at once, but Rome wasn't built in a day. It's going to take time to build all of this. And as we hit the edge cases of the design space, you go back to the table and you think creatively, like, all right, how do we solve this? And something like Arc merges and you plug it in. It's going to take time. And
I empathize with a lot of these people, because if I would still be on the sideline, as I have been, you know, I have not been throughout my Bitcoin career too much in this builder seat. And I think it has had a massive impact on my perception of things, because, you know, I think this insecurity that you feel is when you don't feel in control of your own destiny, right? Is when you kind of like it's up in the air. You know, you're looking at the developers fighting it out on Twitter. You don't know what's happening. You'd like to have some kind of like positive impact and whatnot. But you know, your options are limited. You don't know how to go about it. And so, yeah, it's very easy then to get jaded, and to start going down this downward spiral of like, just do something, right? You guys figure it out or whatever, do something. And that is often just because the fact that you're not in a position where you feel like, you know, you can do something. And for, so that's why I've been like, you know, I've been encouraging people, like a lot of the people I think that are having those conversations right now, they would be well served to take a look again at what ARK is doing and what the potential of it might be, because, you know, all of this conversation around, well, you know, we're not going, our Bitcoin is going to fail because, you know, self-custody is going to be inaccessible to most people on the planet. It's like, well, if that's your concern, you know, again, ARK is the one material avenue that it's just tangible. It feels like it's there. There is code. It's being built. There's two teams working on it. And, you know, everyone is like, oh, well, we need covenants to do all of that UTXO sharing stuff and channel factories. And it's like, well, you have the literal first protocol that is actually achieving those things. You don't need soft forks. You don't need covenants. Like, why aren't you like paying more attention to it? Why aren't you trying to find ways to contribute to it, offering help in terms of testing it and whatnot? So obviously, you know, I'm saying all that at the same time, you know, we still have yet to put all of that stuff in production. It's going to happen sooner than later. But we're super excited about this. I think the ARK node is going to again come pretty quickly. My understanding is we're pretty much finalizing the integration with Bolts right now, and the moment that this is done, the pace is going to pick up significantly, and so I'm looking forward to what happens there next year. I'm looking forward to, there's even another, I mean, we said there's two teams. There's another guy in China. There's a guy, Ben, I don't know if you've seen him, to Disco Collabs or something like that. He's apparently working on an ARK implementation. I think he has a team, they're working on something. And so I think people are starting to see the value there. And I would hope that, you know, there's some of the people that are making a lot of noise on socials. Yeah, would just take a step back and look at what's being built, because it's the white pill. It has been the white pill. I feel so bullish on the prospect of Bitcoin right now, of scaling Bitcoin and of creating an entire financial infrastructure on Bitcoin that's going to be so much better than everything that exists in the industry at the moment. I think everything that's valuable that might have found product market fit on every other chain and whatnot, I think we can do it on ARK in a way that's a lot better. And that is sitting on top of the most liquid asset on the planet. I'm just like, you know, we're picking it apart right now and still creating our mental model for all of this stuff. But we have some crazy wild idea on the way forward, and we're gonna have to, you know, pick up some other people. I mean, if there are developers out there that are interested in contributing to it, please reach out, because we're definitely going to be opening up the team and looking for more talent, because we're gonna need more people to be able to build all of that stuff, and also other people that are building different products. Where if you think that you're able to leverage ARK in some way, we're going to start putting together some kind of outlet for us and the entire team to be able to provide So like resources and however we can to smaller teams and smaller project to try and integrate them within the Arc ecosystem, because we think that this can help. It's not, again, it's not only about payments. It really is all about like every financial application of Bitcoin, you know, DLCs, DLCs are not going to scale on chain. You want to build the derivatives market using DLCs. It's not going to happen on chain, but it's going to happen on Arc. And so we're pretty bullish about this, and we're looking forward to collaborating with the rest of the industry around this.
Yeah, no, like I said, your excitement was palpable in Riga when we last saw each other in person, and that got me excited. So I'm happy we're finally able to hop on here. And I know I've only got 7 minutes left, but you mentioned ArcNode coming out next year. What do you think people are going to see that's going to be an immediate, like, aha, holy shit, this is something that we need to begin implementing widely?
You mean specifically for the Arc node or?
Or it's your implementation. Like,
or Arc in general?
Yeah.
Listen, I don't have... I think the holy shit moment is not going to necessarily come from... the usual Bitcoiner crowd, but I think the holy shit moment and kind of like my wild card right now and something I've been really obsessed with is Meta protocols. And I don't know if there's going to be something in production early next year, but I think we're going to be doing a little bit of forays into what the implications of Arc might be for Meta protocols, because, you know, fundamentally Meta protocols are not, you know, they're not a terrible idea, you know, because a Meta protocol in the sense like something like RGB or you know, Omni or well, obviously runes and ordinals and all that stuff. But a Meta protocol is just something that uses the Bitcoin blockchain, right, as a way to store some data and creates sort of like an adjacent consensus protocol of, like, you know, a different protocol that looks at this data that's indexed onto Bitcoin and derives, you know, and is able to execute higher level applications and services and contracts on top of it, right? Counterparty is another example, right? And the problem with those Meta protocols has always been, well, you know, they're putting shit into onto the Bitcoin chain that we don't really want it to be there. It's kind of like, you know, some people have been considering it spam, but really, you know, I mean, this is an intuition that I have, and we haven't really you know, spent too much time internally looking at this, but I think that when you consider the intersection of Arc and Meta protocols, you start looking at something where you can build financial primitives, financial systems that are much more Bitcoin aligned, and that certainly are not as trustless as on-chain operations and whatnot. But the cool thing with Meta protocols really is that they avoid having to build additional blockchains to do something else with Bitcoin, right? Because when you look at every other scaling solutions or every other solution that claims to be able to bring more utility to Bitcoin, they're just creating other blockchains. A sidechain is another blockchain. A rollup is another blockchain. It's all just other blockchains. And you're connecting those blockchains through bridges and whatever and all of that, right? And then you're creating also all these issues with the fragmentation of the network effect. And this is something that, you know, I've been very vocal about. I want us to avoid taking this path because it has been an absolute disaster in the Ethereum ecosystem in terms of that, in terms of network effect. This is why Ethereum is lagging behind, is the scaling model that they've decided of rollup has created this complete fragmentation in their ecosystem where the incentives of everyone else are not aligned, of the different parts of the ecosystem are not aligned with the main chain anymore. You know, Coinbase at this point, the base rollup, they practically could not care less about Ethereum, you know. And so this is a path that I want us to avoid. And I think that there's something about Meta Protocol where like they're kind of like the underdog here. And I'm looking forward to continue exploring what this might look like. Again, I don't know if it's going to be early next year. Because otherwise, you know, like, okay, well, you have the payment use case, you have the channel rebalancing. What can you do? Well, you can scale DLCs for sure. I think this is a, but again, you need DLCs to pick up in the first place. So what my buddy Shazan at Lavo is building, I think is a good step forward. You know, like he's finally kind of like really hitting the market in stride and trying to scale this technology. And so once he gets to a point where, okay, maybe it starts being expensive to create and settle those DLCs on chain, we can talk about moving them to ARC, but that's not going to happen overnight, right? Yeah. And so what are the other use cases? Well, you know, it's like the set of, unless you're going really full financial services, trading, perps, derivatives, and all of that, that can happen, but that's going to require a bit more creativity and imagination. And it's never going to happen in a trustless, way. But it can happen in ways that are trust minimized and that are, in my opinion, perfectly fine. I'm really, really, really curious to see what we can do there. We'll probably be sharing some stuff, pretty soon in terms of like proof of concept of like what this might look like.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for Bitcoin. And we'll have to keep this conversation going because I'm sure a lot is going to, not unravel, but a lot's going to be happening over the next couple of years. And so definitely check in.
I think once people, I think just like the most exciting thing is, yes, is just like when the ARC nodes gets released and people can finally put this, because I think people still have this idea that ARC is kind of like some sort of vaporware almost, right? They're not going to say it explicitly, but they're kind of like, yeah, like, you know, like we'll see it, you know, when it's there. It's kind of like, well, maybe we'll pay attention to it when it's there, because they feel like it's a very complex system. You know, I think John Carvalho has been on record saying that, you know, shared UTXOs are more complex than Lightning, which is like really not the case at all. So you know, people are kind of like still skeptical because of it's a new novel concept, new novel technology. Once either team or once we release a production implementation, people are going to be like, oh, okay, you know, it's not necessarily going to be about the ARC node and the actual use case of the rebalancing of all of this. I think it's going to be more like, oh shit, like this thing is real, and like, okay, maybe we need to pay attention to it, because yes, it is one of the answer to the Bitcoin scalability concern that we have, and we finally have something to hold on to that we can try and see how it fits and it applies to other use cases that we're interested about. You know, we're not going to be the ones, or at least we hope that we're not the ones dictating what ARC needs to be used for. We want to provide the infrastructure for all builders to come to us and be like, hey, can I do this with ARC? Yes, you can do that. You can do this with ARC. Let's work together to make it happen.
Yeah. Hell yeah. All right. This has been great. Thank you for taking some time to walk us through this. This is the first ARC deep dive we've done on TFTC. Long time coming, but excited to see everything that you do at ARC Labs. What Second's doing. I do think what you guys are doing can push the conversation into a better place. You have to stop complaining about what isn't happening and start focus on things that are actually happening and see what you can do there.
That's right.
All right.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, Marty. Always a good time to catch up.
Always. Peace and love, freaks. Okay.